No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspective, this is Revenge of the Birds.
Good evening, Arizona Cardinals fans. It's been a while. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio, and this is your host, Jess Root, after, we'll call it a pretty long hiatus. It's been a couple of months, I will admit that, as we have hit the NFL offseason. The last time we spoke, the last time we were on the air, it was following the Week 16 game between the... I think it was after the Week 15 game against the Tennessee Titans, as we hit the holidays soon thereafter. And unfortunately, the Arizona Cardinals did not make the postseason, as you all know, fans, as they finished a 10-6 just outside of the playoffs. They were the seventh seed and the first six get in. And so tonight we're officially now in the offseason. The Seattle Seahawks, our division rivals, are the world champions, after a pasting of Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl earlier this month. And so we're into the offseason. We are into the offseason at this point now. So we'll go ahead and get started a little bit. This is what we've done so far, and I'm expecting to get Seth Cox on the line in Red Sea, as we do for most of our podcast episodes, radio episodes. If you have any comments you'd like to call in, talk Arizona Cardinals off season, do so. Give us a call at 646-478-3787. That's 646-478-3787. Or if you would rather not be on the phone, rather not be heard, well, of course, you can also send me some tweets. You can either tweet me at my personal Twitter account at Senor Jess Root, or at the site at Revenge of Birds. At Revenge of Birds, that's our Twitter handle on the internet for social media. You could also find this on Facebook as well. However, I won't be on the Facebook feed to catch questions there. So what's happened this offseason? Obviously, the Seattle Seahawks are the Super Bowl champions. They are the top dog of the football world, with a dominating defensive performance. And soon thereafter, the season's over, and now we look forward to 2014, this is the year in which we are now. We look forward to the draft. We look forward to free agency. And this week is actually when the NFL scouting combine will begin. So we will have, at least on the website, we will have coverage of the combine. I will not be in Indianapolis for that. However, I will keep you posted with the information, stories, measurements, comments, things that will be going on at the combine. You will be able to read about it at revengeofthebirds.com, our SB Nation site for the Arizona Cardinals. So what did we have so far this offseason? A few things worth noting, and still waiting for Seth and Red to come on tonight. Hopefully we can get them on the line. Hopefully there aren't any technical issues. Arizona Cardinals have made a few minor moves as they signed some players to future contracts, and that's perfectly normal. Those are typically your camp bodies, the guys that are going to come in and practice, and who are going to perhaps at the most battle for final roster spots once training camp comes around and the preseason. They did make one. There's been two decent sized moves. The first was an actual free agent signing of one of their own, and that was punter Dave Zastadil, who was re-signed to a two-year contract locking up the punter who has been fantastic. Doesn't have the acolytes, does not have the accolades, no all-pro mentions, no Pro Bowl, but very much a key cog in the special teams and what the Cardinals like to do is he's able to pin teams back deep and allow that defense to do work. They also made some salary cap room as they freed up about $10 million. As they signed, they restructured, a simple restructure of Larry Fitzgerald's contract, converting, he was due to make a little under $13 million this year in salary. 11 3/4 of that were turned into a restructuring bonus, which he got 11 3/4 million dollars up front. He will make $1 million salary, so there was no pay cut, but it cut his cap number by about $10 million to about $8 million, freeing up a lot of cap space, giving the team what we imagine will be some flexibility as we hit the final 3 weeks of the league year before they can start signing free agents of other teams. They got time right now. They've got Carlos Stansman, they want to take a look at. They've got a few, as Steve Keim has already said, and we've got articles on Revenge of the Birds noting as such that the Arizona Cardinals have stated that Steve Keim was on the radio recently, said that they do have offers on the table to their own free agents, a list that includes quite a bit of players. Then we're going to talk about the salary cap as well. The salary cap situation is as the Cardinals move forward. What other possible salary savings could we be seeing out of the Arizona Cardinals? Who could be cut as a result of that? And then we're going to go over a little bit of some of the other off-season news regarding to the NFL. Isn't particularly pertinent yet to the Arizona Cardinals, but there are a couple of big things as the saga, if you've been following the story at all, the Jonathan Martin, Richie Incognito situation out of Miami, the report came out, the NFL released its findings, and it was not pretty for Incognito. We can go into a little bit more in detail later in the show. And likely we have, which made huge waves, at least for a couple of days of the news cycle, as draft prospect Michael Sam out of Missouri came out and stated that he is gay, which Will has been talking about. We now will potentially have the league's first openly gay athlete, male athlete in team sports, at least among the major men's team sports. You see that in the WNBA already, but however, so far of the male team sports, you've seen Jason Collins in the NBA, but he pretty much was done with his career anyway. He's not playing right now, and we'll have to see how that goes. That's a story to follow throughout the season. May not be a story that people care so much about as what the media is going to turn it, because it is a storyline. It really is. It's a storyline to find out how that interaction goes in the locker room, how that happens. So we'll talk about that, and hopefully we get Seth and Red on the line, so it's not just me you're listening to. Again, if you've got some comments, if you've got questions, comments, opinions of any sort, give us a call at 646-478-3787, and we can talk some Arizona Cardinals offseason. And we've got Seth on the line, so let's bring him on. Good evening, Seth. How are you doing tonight?
Good, Jess. How are you?
Good to have you. Glad you could join us tonight as we fire up the podcast after it's been several weeks. How have you been doing in this off season?
Oh, good. Just getting to work on some draft prospect stuff and getting ready for the full-fledged off season to start right after the combine, basically.
And I'm sure the draft will be keeping you busy. You will be heavy into the draft prospects, into the evaluations, into both for our site and for Arizona Sports, another local website. So That and his draft podcast that he does every week. Seth, you're gonna be busy. And for those of you for those of you who haven't, I don't know if I've ever done this. Seth, how can you get a hold of you on Twitter? How can our listeners get a hold of you?
You can follow me at Seth Cox FB. I get on there pretty much every day. I check out if you have questions on draft prospects or anything kind of Cardinals related. I'm always around and willing to give my opinion. Unless Jess has already answered the question, then I'll just let him handle it.
Well, let's go ahead and get started. We've got the off season. We've got the first move of the off season. Other than the bit pieces, those little future contracts. Fans sometimes get a little bit excited about those players. They think who's going to be the next diamond in the rough. Rarely do those guys may come out to be anything at all other than camp body. Every once in a while it happens. There's a couple of intriguing players to look at, but we have to actually see them in practice, see them in camp before we think anything of them. But Dave Zastadil, the Cardinals didn't make a splash with Carlos Dansby. They didn't re-sign Eric Winston. But the first guy they got on their contract is they brought back their veteran punter, Dave Zastadil. What did you think of that?
You know, when you just look at it, it's an expensive contract for a punter in the sense of, you know, kind of what he makes per year. But just how effective he was in kind of changing field position, that's pretty much all you look at in terms of what punters do is how they affect field position, and his was so positive that, you know, you can say, okay, come back next year, do it again, and, you know, we'll kind of work from there. And that's basically, to me, what they did. It made no sense.
And they got him for another 2 years. At his age, he's 35 years old, so the one thing you kind of worry about is kind of the aging leg or becoming more injury prone. This is a guy that has had knee problems in the past. He's been over them. This is more 3-4 years ago when he was at Cleveland. It kind of was bugging him, and since he's come to Arizona, that really has not been an issue. And the contract looks like this. It's a 2-year, just under $3 million deal, making a base salary this next year of $955,000. He had a signing bonus of $545,000. And then he'll get a $25,000 workout bonus here next month. Cap number this year was $1.25 million, and in 2015 will be about $1.7 million. But apparently with the way and it won't be huge because the signing bonus wasn't big, is that the dead money will not be significant should they decide to move another direction after this season. I don't see anything happening this season, though. I like the move. It's a very under-the-radar move because the big deal, I mean, Terrell Suggs, the Ravens are about to announce that they have a new contract with Terrell Suggs. Dave Zastadil is nowhere near that sort of signing. However, for what you got out of him and the impressive nature of between his kicks and the play of the Gunners of Justin Bethel or Brian McCann or whoever they had on the opposite side of the field, just makes their defense even better. So all in all, I don't want to spend too much time. I like the move. I was actually surprised because I thought that they would go in a different direction in terms of money. Because you could sign a guy for a few hundred thousand dollars less, but again, the production probably isn't going to be there.
No, and you know, the only thing that you look at in that case and in that sense is, you know, undrafted free agents. You bring one in, if he outperforms what Zassi does, I think you're out, like you said, $500,000-$600,000, and you bite the bullet because the rookie salary will be less than that. I think it'll be like $275,000 usually or $300,000. So it'll end up being less than what you're paying Zassi for 1 year, and then you get a break on the second year. So that's the only thing you do at this point. I mean, that's really the only way you can even look at it. You're not going to want to bring in another veteran in the sense of, you know, do you want to pay somebody else 750, I think, is the veteran minimum. So it's going to either be somebody undrafted or somebody that is, I think it's 3 years in the league, you're considered not a veteran. So those are the only two options, in my eyes, where they could look at, you know, quote unquote, upgrading the position, but they'd have to really, really impress in off season and camp.
Well, and that brings us to one that I'm sure you've got. I know you've got some strong feelings for. Let's move on to the next topic of Larry Fitzgerald. The Arizona Cardinals desperately needed some salary cap. They weren't. I guess there wasn't quite the word desperate, but they had to make a move or two to be able to put themselves in a position where they could re-sign some of their own players before the league year starts when market hits, and then who knows what happens. And then they did that in Larry Fitzgerald as they restructured his contract. Fans have been looking that this is a very, very unselfish move in the terms of Larry Fitzgerald, team guy, wanting to win. He didn't take any sort of pay cut. It just was a simple restructure, turning almost all of this year's salary into a bonus. But it took this year's contract, and instead of having an $18 million cap hit, it is now at 8.6. So it freed up almost another $10 million in salary space that they can use, ideally, in Larry's words, so that they can work on bringing back Carlos Dansby and Frosty Rucker and taking care of Patrick Peterson. Obviously, it was kind of a necessary thing. There was chatter, and the team kind of poked fun at Adam Schefter for his tweet months ago about how he said it was anywhere between possible and inevitable that there would be some sort of quote-unquote divorce between the Cardinals and Fitzgerald. It didn't make – I mean, in some ways it made sense that they would to cut him, but the amount of dead money would have been fantastic. And the situation of the Cardinals, and you know, you're going to talk about a little bit about this, but it almost made no sense, considering the situation of the team, to cut ties with Fitzgerald, who was still a very productive player, still almost got 1,000 yards, and that was with a couple of bulky hamstrings throughout a good chunk of the season. I was glad to see it happen. The one thing that it does, the eyebrow raiser, is 2015, and they've been very stout. Michael Bidwill and Steve Keim both have been very firm in saying they want Larry Fitzgerald to retire Cardinal. So unless they're saying that he's going to retire after 2014, which I would say is nigh into impossible to happen considering what he wants to accomplish in his career, they have a $23.6 million cap hit for him next year if were to be cut or traded, leaving over $14 million in dead money for 2015. So they really mortgaged, at least they mortgaged the future a little bit for the success of now, but they're being in a position. Seth, I know you got strong feelings on the subject. What did you think of the move? Was it a move that Larry had to make? Was it a move that the team had to make right now? And should they have gone in a different direction?
You know, it becomes the question of, do you think this team is built to win a Super Bowl in 2014? If you think that Carson Palmer and the offense can do enough to step up in next year and that they can, you know, kind of be the answer, then yeah, it was the right move, because what you're going to allow is you're going to allow the potential re-signing of Dansby, something we'll get into in a little bit, but you also allow them to go be players in free agency, either making a big splash with the left tackle or going to find help at the safety position and freeing up your kind of your draft choices as well. What it does is it just makes you players for this year, and it kind of coincides with what they're doing with Carson Palmer. You know, something that you and I have talked about on Twitter and other things is Palmer was basically on 3 one-year contracts. The Cardinals were happy enough with what he did, and they obviously played themselves far enough out of a position for, you know, kind of a first-round quarterback this year. So, you know, they're going to go with Palmer next year. Now the question is, can he get over the hump? Can he be the quarterback that on the back nine games was, I think, 16 touchdowns to 8 or 9 interceptions and was a different quarterback in what was a much different offense? Or, you know, is he still the, I'm going to give you 2 bad games, 3 good games, 1 bad game, 2 good games type of quarterback that he's kind of been his entire career after the elbow injury kind of sidelined him. So that's what the question becomes is, if you restructure Fitz and it allows you to get help in free agency as well as obviously the draft, then it's the right move. But you have to pay the piper, so to speak, at some time. So you're going to have to pay Fitzgerald. Like you said, he didn't take a pay cut. What he did was noble in the sense of, okay, I want to make this team better for a playoff run in 2014. But it's not like he said, oh, you know what, take that $10 million, cut off my salary, let's renegotiate and, you know, get my numbers down to a more realistic level. He just said, okay, you owe me $23.6 million next year, and we'll deal with this again next year. You know, we'll talk again next year, basically. So, you know, you're going to have to pay it sometime. You know, I kind of liken this to what the Diamondbacks did when they won their first World Series. Everybody was okay with it because they ended up getting a World Series out of it. But you have to wonder, if that World Series never happened, how fans would have felt about the same, you know, lean years that lasted, you know, with a playoff appearance here or there. But, and that's kind of what I likened it to. If you end up winning a Super Bowl in the next 2 years with this restructure and, you know, type of thing, then, you know what, nobody's going to say anything. But if you don't make the playoffs or, you know, God forbid something happens next year where you have a bunch of injuries, it all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, now we have to pay $23.6 million to a 31-year-old. You know, we need to cut Palmer because we're going to owe him $12 million. We owe Darnell Dockett $8.5 or $9 million next year. You know, we're paying 3 30-plus-year-olds over 40 million in combined salary, and you know the salary cap's only 130 million. Let's, you know, we got to do something. So, you know, it's a win now type of move, and it's a smart move, but you have to hope that it works with the division that they're in.
And then that's the point. I like the mentality. And actually, kind of something I really enjoy seeing is the way you hear Steve Keim talk about negotiations and free agency. And he's kind of putting on a show for fans in a way that, well, at least last season, there really was nothing in terms of negotiation. There was an offer on the table. If you like it, you took it. If you didn't, you don't. That sort of thing only works if you have a destination that players can see is going in the right direction, which they are, and they're gearing up for ideally a win, winning now. The challenge is, and I really like the mentality behind this. They see the Seattle Seahawks, the Super Bowl champions. They see the San Francisco 49ers, who beat them twice, a very, very, very tough team. And they look at them as something other than invincible, something that the rest of the league really doesn't see. The Cardinals view them, they kind of embody the temperament of the head coach. He said, I don't see anything that great or unbeatable about them. And then they showed that when they went to Seattle and won. Just showed that the type of potential that there is there, and even with Carson Palmer's 4 interception that game, they still came away with the win. The task is, they really can't slip up at all. They have to be completely focused at the task in hand. They need a little bit of luck. They need health. And they can't afford any wasted games like they had a couple of times this year. It seems almost absurd that you have a 10-win season and you don't make the playoffs. But that's exactly what happened, and it could viably happen again in 2014. I like the move. I think in terms of ease, it was a no-brainer for Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, think about it. He was due to make $12.75 million, but he wasn't going to get that really wasn't going to happen until he got his game checks. He got himself $11.75 million in the bank account right now. He got his money now. I think there was really no downside for him. Interesting thing is the Cardinals, they want to have him for the duration of his career. There is something to consider. I know the league is trying to keep the salary cap from spiking. There's new revenue that will be added as well. One, CBS has now picked up some of the Thursday night football, so there's new money there. There's another TV contract coming due, I believe, after 2014. And based on the money that could come infused into that deal, you could see a massive jump in the salary cap as by negotiation has to be X percent of the revenue. Without getting into a situation of the Cowboys or the Redskins who had their hands hit a little bit. They got in trouble for manipulating the salary cap. They can almost, if they keep playing this game with Fitz, where they, okay, let's turn it into another bonus, push that money back far enough into one, then it's not going to be felt as badly because there is the salary cap room already, or two, perhaps it gets him into the latter year where he decides to retire. I know that there's going to have to be a big decision made after this season, but I just wonder how long they can keep playing that game. Okay, we'll push the money this way. And then, of course, there's also the possibility if he doesn't – there are some de-escalators in his contract. If he gets less than 80 reception, then it de-escalates the salary. I don't know what the exact numbers are. Bottom line for me, now the question, do you think, Seth, that this is going to be Fitz's final season? Are we going to see – a major overhaul, including the face of the franchise, where he has moved after 2014?
You know, one of the things I've been looking at a lot is kind of how the salary table changes for the Cardinals next year. And I think that they did this deal with the idea that they can you talked about going back to the negotiating table, but I think they did this deal with the idea that, okay, maybe if he produces, we have a mini playoff run, get into the playoffs, win a game, you know, who knows what happens. But as long as we get to the playoffs and Fitz plays well, we can eat that giant number for 1 year and then get to 2016 and kind of make a run on it. That's what I think they're looking at. On the other hand, then, like you said, they're saying, okay, Fitz doesn't play as well. You know, maybe the team goes a little south. Maybe they finish at 9-7, 8-8, and now they can go back to Fitz and say, look, you're not producing as well. We still need more help from you in order to add more talent to this team. Can you do a restructure again? Or, you know, and they'll probably start talking about the word pay cut with him. I think in a long, very long-winded answer, yes, I think he'll be back in 2015, barring a complete collapse of the Cardinals record-wise and Fitz refusing to do anything about it financially or take on any of the burden financially, which I don't see happening in either sense. So, but also it's February, so everybody's kind of got rose-colored glasses. So,
this is the fun part of the early part of the off season. I think he'll be back again. I will say that every time I hear Michael Bidwell or I hear Steve Keim talking about it, is their intention for Larry Fitzgerald to retire, a member of the Arizona Cardinals, or to be here for the duration of his career. This, by the way, is the exact same thing that we heard from Lon Babbie and the Phoenix Suns regarding Steve Nash, all knowing full well that they were going to have to cut ties with him if they to be able to start over again or to change the team in a fashion that would get them competitive again. And so I'm a little bit, and I'm not normally this way, I'm a little bit jaded on the comment there. Is this, I can totally see, because it happened with Steve Nash. Phoenix era, we've seen it before. We've seen these big stars. We saw Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling traded away. We saw Steve Nash traded away, and the most in the granted the haul they got lots of picks out of it, but to have it happen in the off season and sent to the team that your fan base hates the most was really not terribly fun. And so we've seen that before, and so I don't believe it completely when I hear that they're completely intend on having him retire as a Cardinal, or if that's just what they're saying. And I know in the business, when you're in the media, when you're in the sports business, when you're talking about analyzing things that are going to happen, there's one thing that's certain: you're going to get disinformation, you're going to get misinformation all the time. That's just how the business goes, because they want to show their hand. At the same time, I look back at Adrian Wilson. He's another guy, a lifer as a Cardinal, who in 2012 was still in the middle of his contract, and he took a drastic pay cut and did it for the sake of team. He eventually saw his production and his playing time decrease, and only to have his name end up on the salary cap casualty list where he was released and ended up signing with the New England Patriots. We don't know what happened for that. There's a little bit different. He was seeing the mortality of his career. He was seeing the end of his career. I don't see Larry Fitzgerald thinking that far. I don't think he intends on retiring anytime soon at all. His current deal goes through 2018. With what he wants to accomplish in career, I think he wants another contract after that. And so while I believe that he'll probably be with the team in 2015, especially if the team has success, I wouldn't be surprised at all should they cut him, should they trade him. Somehow they find some value to send him elsewhere to save that salary. And while that dead money that for 2015 looks horrific at the $14 million, it's a really big number, that can always be mitigated a little bit, because you can always designate three players per year as your June 1st cut and be able to split that dead money up over two seasons. As $14 million is a lot. It's really a lot.
Yeah, and, you know, that's just kind of where they're going to be coming up here, because it's, you know, they painted themselves into this hole when they went on that magical run, and they had to pay Larry, and this is kind of Rod Graves' MO, is that we'll give you, here's all this money, and, you know, kind of the future be damned. And now we're looking at it through a lot of the different people, you know, Cobb's contract, Dockett's contract, Darren College, Adam Snyder, even Lyle Sendelines. I mean, those are just a lot of goofy contracts that Graves wrote up and kind of allowed the agents to take advantage of the team. Whereas it seems, and obviously it's only 1 year, but it seems that's, you know, it's kind of the reverse now with Steve Keim in charge.
And in parts, and this has been, I don't, at least with the Rod Graves situation in Larry Fitzgerald's previous deals, it was a case where he held all the leverage. And in some ways, he held all the leverage again. His contracts, if you look at the difference between Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin's situation with their contract, Larry Fitzgerald had the big contract to begin with, and it was the first time they redid his deal, and he was coming up on that monster fifth season on the contract, where those rookie contracts were never meant to go that way. It was to force them to negotiation tables. And so they had to pay him that money or cut him, and at that point it was too valuable a player. While you have a guy like Anquan Boldin, who was a second-round pick, so he didn't get the big deal in the first place, they extend him before, and so he didn't get he left money on the table, essentially, but he got that money up front. And you can see where Anquan Boldin's situation, he became bitter because of the money, and it felt like that they were dealing things differently with Fitz, and in part it was simply because he had the leverage. The contract he signed at the beginning created leverage for the next deal, and when that deal was about to expire, it created a leverage for this deal, and they had to do it, otherwise the cap hit was going to be even worse than the potential to do it. That being said, and I just got a comment from Andy, one of our site writers, Andy Stanzup, who gave Shane Doan. Granted, I'm not a hockey guy. I know enough about the Coyotes to get by, but I'm definitely not a hockey guy. But he does point out that Shane Doan has been a Phoenix legend for almost 20 years. Maybe Fitz is the exception. I think that could be the case. I do think that with the NFL, it is kind of a different animal in the sense that we've seen stars. I mean, perfect example. I mean, just two off-seasons ago was Peyton Manning. Teams have to make very difficult decisions on if they were superstars because of money situations and for the direction of their team. And moving on, as we go into the next part, where so we've got Larry Fitzgerald locked up, restructured, so we got paid early. We got Zeta locked for the next couple of years. Let's talk a little free agency. We've got the Arizona Cardinals, and right now all they can do is talk to their guys. Steve Keim said that they have offers on the table. We've got a list of free agents. So we can talk about this. We can speculate what's going to happen in the when things open up on March 11th. I prefer to talk this right now. Focus this show on the Cardinals' own free agents. Their unrestricted free agents include Rashard Mendenhall, Carlos Dansby, Jeff King, Jay Feely, Antoine Kaysen, Andre Roberts, Eric Winston, Zastel Science, who's no longer on the list, Matt Shaughnessy, Javier Arenas, Jeremiah Bell, Frosty Rucker, Mike Gibson, Corey Sperry, Brian McCann, Jim Dray. They've got some restricted guys. They've got tight end Jake Ballard. They've got Marcus Bernard, Ronald Talley, Alfonso Smith. And then two guys that are their exclusive rights free agents, which basically means not free agents, because the only way they can sign somewhere else is if the Cardinals do not tender them their contract. If they're tendered a contract, they have to sign or leave the NFL. Alameda Tamu and Everett Thompson fall into that category. There's going to be some turnover on this team, and some of the fan conversations is I find it fascinating, the mindset of readers and all the different perspectives on who they want, who they think should come back. If I had to pick the top ones, I'm going to say, and as pretty much everyone said, Charles Danzi is a must. It's for many reasons. One, he's still making plays. Two, there is definitely some concern about that no one's talking about really yet with Darryl Washington's trial coming up in April. He could be seeing, with as much time as there's left in the offseason, we could be seeing him lose some time on the field, being suspended again with a league action there. Love to see Carlos Dansby, but I think he's their must guy. After that, as Larry Fitzgerald, I think Frosty Rucker is valuable depth. Matt Shaughnessy, although they have depth behind them, they've got the kind of players behind them where you have, okay, you've got a Sam Macho who kind of has the same type of idea, who I think gives you that run-stopping force on the edge. Sam Macho, Lorenzo Alexander, who played well against the run before he got hurt. You've got Alex Okafor. I'd like to see Shaughnessy back because he's the guy that you know can do it. He's going to be looking for more money than he got last year. But I'd say Dansby, I'd say Shaughnessy. In my world, I'd go that direction. And then I want to see Jake Ballard rock back. I don't necessarily need to see him tendered because I don't think he will get the attention in the market. And to have to pay him $1.2 million, what would be, I think, for the whatever round tender that it would take to do it. After that, I'm really kind of for pretty much the rest of the group. If you, who are your guys that you say, hey, we need to have those guys back?
I think you start with Dansby, but you do it with the caveat of it has to be at a reasonable short-term deal. You know, he is 33. He was playing for a contract, so there were a lot of incentives for him, and he did play extremely well last year. But he also has to be realistic. He was in a defense that kind of catered to his abilities, and they still struggled to cover tight ends, and that's part of what he was you know, supposed to do as an inside linebacker in the defense. So you can, you know, just in a reasonable salary range, maybe 2 years, you know, up to $10 million, maybe up to $10 million, not a year total. So I think that's where I would be. And then I agree on Shaughnessy. His effectiveness against the run was completely undersold by a lot of people. And I think having the guys that are coming back next year, you're able to be more flexible with Shaughnessy at the outside linebacker and the defensive end. From there, Frosty Rucker's another guy. I know that Ricky Lumpkin is supposed to be coming back as well. They liked him last year. He just got injured in training camp, so he probably will have a spot to fight for as well. So
didn't he picked up by the Raiders at some point during the season? And I believe now, did they not offer him one of those future contracts or those exclusive rights contracts? I thought he got picked up by, or was it just a practice squad contract? I don't recall.
You know what? Let me look real quick. Because he's still listed on his bio at the Cardinals. I'll have to talk to... Oh, there. Hold on. Let me see here. I should have talked to his agent before I even said anything. But, yeah, he is a... He did sign for 2014 already, so he's with them. You're correct. Sorry about that. So, yeah, so then that means bringing back Frosty is even more important because... You want to try to limit the turnover on the defense where you were successful last year as much as possible. And then obviously Alameda Te'amu. I as well am very intrigued by bringing Ballard back, but it's more of if it's the right scenario and if he's not, you know, I know he's restricted, so there's some caveats to how it works, but I think if you get him again at the right range, I think that's the most important thing. But those are my kind of three. I think if you keep your strength intact, which was the defensive line and the linebackers, and you're able to, you know, kind of replace the weaknesses, which was the safeties on defense, and then I think that's why I would go in that direction.
And another guy that say Frosty Rucker's not ends up going elsewhere. Ronald Talley is an interesting thing. We obviously one of the guys at the back of the roster don't get enough play. I mean, pretty much the one guy at the back of the roster that gets play among Cardinals fans is Ryan Williams, because it's sort of a mystery, the whole Ryan Williams thing. But Ronald Talley was a guy that got specific mention by Bruce Arians for his play, especially early in the season in training camp, how strong he was. He's another guy. He's a defensive end. He can play a little bit of defensive tackle, but he's more of that Frosty Rucker type guy. However, down the stretch, disappeared. He was deactivated for the last several games it was, and saw very little playing time, which is an interesting. I don't know what happened. I don't know what the story is there. Whether it was not playing well, getting into the coach's doghouse, or they just really liked the rotation that they had. So he might be a guy worth bringing back who has the gear and the system. But other than that, I'm really interested. I'm kind of intrigued at the and question and moving forward that defensive line depth. What happens there? Obviously, now that there's another guy on there that I think will come back. Now there's a couple of players that I think will come back. One is Jim Dre. I think he'll probably return. Arians loved him, incredibly reliable. There isn't anything he does spectacularly, but he's valuable in special teams. He wasn't, I mean, I don't, some would say he wasn't a complete abomination as a blocker. He made catches, and he was generally where he needed to be. But after that, I'm really not sold on anyone there. I know Jay Feely said, at least, that he's talked to the team. They want him back. He wants to be back. After that, I don't know about Eric Winston. Personally, I'd ride with Bobby Massey, but as you've heard and it's kind of been evident, there is a little bit of disenchantment for some reason with Massey. So we might see Winston back. Are there any players on that list do you think are will be back? Or take a guy like Rashard Mendenhall. Do you see him coming back? I know he's a big Arians guy. Or do you see the team moving forward with Stephon Taylor or bringing in another veteran-type player for that role?
I just think that the lack of effectiveness of Rashard last year doesn't warrant another, I think it was $3 million or whatever salary. When you're kind of pinching pennies at this point, you want to keep that money light. So if you can do a guy, you know, in the mold of, you know, Stephon Taylor at $500,000 and probably get the same type of production, I think you do that as opposed to bringing back a guy like Mendenhall, who, again, made a lot of money and didn't do a lot. The other thing is, and I don't know, I know that they were happy, and people I've talked to say they want to get him some more touches, but I don't know how much more they're going to do with Ellington. I mean, he did get a lot of touches for a six-round rookie, but I think the guy's so electric that he needs the ball in his hands more, so that, to me, you know, is another reason. And maybe that's just confirmation bias on my side where I'm saying, oh, I want Andre Ellington to get the ball more, so don't bring back Rashard Mendenhall so he takes his touches type thing. I'm trying not to, you know, be that way, but I think that's kind of where we all are at this point, is we would like to see a little more Ellington. So if you don't bring back Mendenhall and you're not paying a big running back to take carries, then that, you know, that's a more likely scenario.
Well, and in the case with Ellington, I'm really interested to see how they move forward, because by all accounts, middle of last year, they made it kind of clear that they didn't see Andre Ellington projected forward in his career as a guy who is a full-time running back. So I expect him to see more touches, but I don't know if he's going to get more carries. I think it'll be more giving him that look at receiver. And it was late in the season that they made comments about him being talented enough to be a number two receiver on some team. So I don't. The one thing I don't like about the makeup of the running back room right now is if they don't bring Rashard Mendenhall back. I'm not saying, hey, they need to bring Mendy back, because he is what he is. I mean, I see Stephon Taylor as being just a younger version of Rashard Mendenhall, and he's a whole lot cheaper. If you're going to go that route, you go that route. The problem is they don't have much experience at there. They've got Taylor, and they've got Ellington, who's got 1 year under the belts each. They've got Ryan Williams, who, the story of which we will discuss at some point if he's still on the team. He's been with the team 3 years, but has seen, you know, handful of carries. Not exactly a guy you could call a seasoned vet. Alphonso Smith, a guy that's been on and off rosters, who was valuable last year. I think they're going to bring in a veteran of some sort, whether that's Mendenhall with somebody else. But that's the only thing that concerns me on that. So that would lead me to believe perhaps Mendy is back, because they will want a veteran in that room to kind of lead the way. And I know Mendenhall, aside from the lack of production, they did find him very valuable as a role, not only as the workhorse type of carrier with the ball, but also to lead the way in the running back room. Look at Eric. Do you see Eric Winston coming back? I know your view is pretty much why, as you saw, there was a stark decline in his play between, okay, now he's a guy who's been on three different teams in 3 different years, and the possibility that he's going to be going on to his fourth team in as many years. His numbers, at least his grade, went well. Now, did you see when I posted the article a couple of days ago about what happened with Eric Winston, do you see that as more, in your observation, how you looked at the game, as a decrease in productivity, of diminished skills, or was it the scheme set that caused him to have some troubles as he played better down the stretch?
Yeah, he's definitely not really a fit in the scheme. He was a guy I said coming into the year that he struggled with speed off the edge, and that's kind of what the Cardinals face in the division, you know. So six times a year he's going to be facing speed off the edge. He was so ineffective in the run game for the first time in his career, and that was what was the most baffling to me, especially as they went more towards the zone schemes later in the season and went away from power football. He only posted three positive grades on Pro Football Focus in the run game, and his, you know, kind of worst games of the season outside of game one against St. Louis all came in the back half of the schedule when the offense was having, you know, quote unquote more success. So, you know, that's where my problem is. I'm not going to look too much into the Houston game because he had to block J.J. Watt, and that's just not fair for him because he's just not talented enough anymore. And J.J. Watt's the best defensive player in football. But, you know, against Tennessee, against Philadelphia, against St. Louis, you know, in week 14, even against San Francisco and, you know, things of that nature, he was getting no push in the run game. And that, to me, is where the problem is at least when you, you know, have a guy like Levi Brown, and I'll just bring his name up because we all know him, at least you know you're going to get one effective, you know, thing in the game of football. You're going to get a guy that can block in the run game. He's going to get the crap kicked out of him in pass protection, but at least he'll block in the run game. With Eric Winston this year, it was really neither. Towards the end of the year, his pass protection picked up, like you said. You know, he wasn't allowing as many sacks, or he didn't allow a lot of sacks towards the end of the year. Still allowed some pressures, but overall, I think it was just a bad fit for what Arians wants to do. You know, kind of a guy that struggles with speed with a quarterback that doesn't do much except move up in the pocket, and now all of a sudden, and you know, and then guards that can't really pass protect, all of a sudden it just becomes a cluster, and you kind of get the first 8 weeks of the offense, and then the last 8 weeks showed you, okay, well, we can do things a little differently. This is what we want to do. But if you're going to run Arians' offense the way Arians wants to run it, then you don't bring Winston back. If he's going to continue to change the scheme to kind of adapt to what the players he has and who he's comfortable with, then, you know, bring him back for another year. It's not going to be the worst thing in the world, but it's still going to cost you, I think, what, $3.75 million or whatever he made this last year. So it's still going to be semi-expensive.
Now, we've got a couple callers on the line. Been on for a couple of minutes here. Let me bring the first of the two. We've got a 734 number. Thanks for having on. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. Introduce yourself, and what do you have for us tonight? Hello, you with us? So we have a caller from this area code 734. Are you still there on the 259? This is Jess Root for Revenge of the Birds Radio.
Oh, hey.
Hey, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing good. What were you guys' thoughts about the Tennessee game?
Tennessee game. what facet? I mean, are you talking about the defense, how they came back offensively? What parts do you want?
I thought the defense played like shit, to be honest.
Well, it was not one of the I'll take it first, Seth. It was an interesting game because it was the first game that they had to deal with, or the first full game that they had to deal with, Tyrann Mathieu being out. And it was interesting with the comments after the game. He didn't think that perhaps it would cause that much of an issue. Patrick Peterson made the comments. I don't know how much to buy into that. However, though, you did see that the assignments in the secondary looked different, and it was, for crying out loud, it was Ryan Fitzpatrick. Ryan Fitzpatrick shredded them for over 400 yards, so obviously there was something to that. They made plays down the stretch, but I think more than anything it was after they had continuity back there, and you had a game changer in the slot in Tyrann Mathieu. When you take him out of the game, you slide Jerrod Powers on nickel downs to the nickel, where perhaps he's more suited, but then you bring Antoine Kaysen on the outside, who hasn't seen a lot of playing time. I think it had more to do that. I think the Tennessee game was an outlier. based on what we saw. It was a bad game, but there were reasons for it. And the very next week, you saw that they won in Seattle. So I wasn't too worried about it at the time until you saw things fix back up.
Yeah.
What do you think, Seth?
Well, and you look at it, and, you know, a lot of the narratives of what the Cardinals struggled with all year kind of came to pass. You had the Cardinals' ineffectiveness to kind of get a pass rush going. John Abraham was basically shut down the whole game. Patrick Peterson continues to struggle with, you know, kind of those nuanced route runner type players that aren't necessarily burners or kind of physical guys, but guys that know how to set up moves and Kendall Wright just kind of toasted him all game long. And then you had Delanie Walker, wreaking havoc as the tight end, and Jeremiah Bell just struggling in coverage. And so it kind of became a cliche for the season of problems on the defense, and they all came to a head right at the same time. And as Jess said, it was the first game without Matthew, and his importance and what he did, I think, kind of showed through in that process, is that he was, a linchpin and kind of the queen, if you will, in the chess game of what Todd Bowles likes to do defensively, and his versatility and missing him was tough.
That answers your question. Anything else you'd like to add tonight?
Yeah, I feel like we'll be a pretty strong team for next year, but I mean, Larry Fitzgerald's just got to come up big. Like, there's no doubt about it. He's putting the holes up front.
I don't doubt that. In fact, I think they're banking on that. They paid him that money. They expect, okay, they saw glimpses of it at the very end of the season. His production was more than 2012, but he still, you saw some of the issues that he had with injuries. They are banking on a big Larry Fitzgerald year in 2014, and they have to if they expect to make noise in the NFC West like they expect and hope to do.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I feel like we got a playoff run coming in, but, you know, we also have a pretty hard conference, too. I mean, like, you know what I mean?
Yes, most certainly. That's the one thing we're going to have to see you've got this team in a very, very difficult conference and a very difficult division, but they're not giving it up, so they're going to try and make a run with the personnel that they've got, try to make a couple of changes here or there, because they know they can play with those guys, and if they can, with the players coming back, with Matthew coming back at some point during the season, with Cooper coming back, hopefully being ready for training camp, you're going to see an improved team. Hopefully they can keep track and keep the step up and be able to have a few things go their way. Thanks for calling tonight. We've got another caller on the line. Well, thanks for having us. We welcome the guests. So thanks for listening.
Go Lions. Go Lions.
Now, I don't know about that, the whole Go Lions thing, but we'll go on to the next caller. Thanks for holding. Sorry, it's been a few minutes. This is Jess from Revenge of the Birds Radio. Who are you tonight? And thanks for coming on.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Yes, this is Ben.
How you doing, Ben?
Good. How are you?
Doing all right.
Looking forward to next season. And the draft's coming up. How would you feel if they drafted Michael Sam?
If we drafted who?
Michael Sam.
Michael Sam. Just enough, Ben. We're actually going to talk about Michael Sam here in a couple minutes. As a player, I mean, the whole thing that right now is going through the player evaluation. I'll defer to Seth. Seth, have you had a chance to do much evaluation on Sam as a player yet?
I haven't. Actually, Justice and I on our podcast on Thursday led with this question and topic. Basically, she said, what I said was, you know what, whatever off the field he does is not anybody's business anyways, so it doesn't matter. It's going to be a circus, and it doesn't deserve to be, so you just evaluate the player. As a player, he's been a late-round guy, kind of this entire thing. I know some people had him as like a third rounder or fourth rounder. He had a lot of sacks on season nine. Nine came in three games. He was really limited in what he did at Mizzou. When you have a guy that only plays 58% of the snaps, you're not, you know, you're not necessarily one of the best players on the team at that point. I think it gets more hype because he was awarded SEC Co-Defensive Player of the Year. But from a talent perspective and a translatable game perspective, he's a bigger guy that doesn't move with great quickness or speed. He doesn't possess a ton of power either. He's kind of a singular pass rusher type. He doesn't have secondary moves that he can lean on. He doesn't play necessarily well with his hands, keeping guys off of him and getting, you know, separation before he makes a secondary move. So, you know, as a player, he's got some tools, but he's not a guy that you're going to take an early kind of leap on because he does have a lot of things that he needs to work on. So,
yeah, and being gay definitely, you know, hurts his draft stock a little bit.
And I'll jump in on that. I'm not sure that does. I'm honestly not sure that does, especially coming out as the issue is right now, is that you have a player whose talent level, whose game film, there are concerns. One, of making the transition from defensive end to outside linebacker. Two, that he wasn't on the field as much as he could have been, or as much of an impact player, that if you believe he's an impact player, why wasn't he on the field more? I don't think that the gay issue will be much of an issue for draft stock. I think everything I've heard has been more related to, and Seth, we're going to talk a little bit more about that later, so I'll probably push that topic. It's more of the circus that goes with it. I don't think that the players in the locker room are going to have quite as many issues. There will be players. I just don't think at this point, and I'll put this, players in the NFL have played with gay men before. They have played with gay teammates already. It's something that's happened. They just haven't come out. So I'm not terribly worried about that, but I don't think that his draft status will be affected by his having come out as an openly gay man, because that was something, whether or not he came out, that's something that was going to be a concern already, and we know that based on just track history with general managers and in the combine and the draft process. We appreciate your call tonight as we're going to discuss the topic a little bit later. So thanks Ben, for coming on. Yeah. Oh, another Lions guy. Well, thanks for having coming on. I believe we've got our first caller back on the line. So let me pull him back on, see if he's got something. Hopefully it's not Lions related. Hello again. This is Revenge of the Birds. This is Just Root again. How are you doing?
Oh, I got back on.
Yes. So did you mean to come back on for another question or?
Yeah. Okay. I feel like they have not played with gay people before. Like, let's be honest. This is the only gay guy that will ever play football. Maybe like a couple more, but no. It just doesn't work out that way. It's too much of a non-feminine sport.
I think, and I can attest from people I've played with and people I know that have played, that there are a lot of things that we don't know that go on in locker rooms and behind closed doors. That's not true. There have been other individuals that have been gay that have played the sport before. There was a story, I can't remember where it was, about the 1980s about two openly gay men on one of the NFL teams. I can't even remember the team at this time. If you want to say that there won't be any more openly gay people, maybe that's possible. I don't think it is, but Jess said earlier, the people in the locker room don't have a problem with that part of it, and I think that's what fans need to understand, is that it's not the sexuality part of it. They don't want to have to answer questions about what somebody else does in the bedroom, because they're not answering those questions about the guys that are having affairs on their wives or the guys that have, you know, seven different kids from seven different women, they don't have to answer those questions, so why should they have to talk about that? And that's where the kind of the angst comes from, and not because of anything else related to it.
Oh, and there will be. I know there are issues. I know there are players that are against it. There are players that are going to be uncomfortable with it. But it's not like something new. In fact, I mean, when we get into the Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin thing, that's one of the things that came up. If for those of you, those listeners who did read the whole report, that it wasn't just Martin that was a target of the berating of Pouncey and Incognito and Jerry. There was another unnamed young offensive lineman who was targeted and abused verbally because they believed that he was homosexual. So there was that aspect. So yes, there's part of the NFL that isn't ready for that as a whole. But like the rest of the world, when it comes to the workplace, I don't think that the sexuality part is the issue as so much as it is the media circles. So the same reason why having Tim Tebow on a team became a distraction. It wasn't a distraction because, oh my gosh, there's this guy that's going to be looking at me in the showers. There might be a little bit of uncomfortable feelings with that, but more than anything, it's more about, oh, these media guys are trying to make a story. Whoa, how is it playing with the gay guy? How do you feel? How do you feel that he's openly? They don't want to answer questions about that because it's not about football, not about football at all. And so I'm, regardless of what you're as listeners, as readers, as fans, as media, what your views are, or even these players, what their views are personally about homosexuality as a lifestyle, they've likely already played. And as we saw, in a football locker room, note this, a situation in college where guys are less mature than professional adults, they were able to handle that, and they flourished. And so we've already seen it. We have the lab experience. You can say we've had this experience that, yes, it can work, and it did work, and I think it will work in the NFL, but the only issue is the media part that will be asking questions. And the other part of that is it's not the players, it's the fans, because there will be fans that will target Sam specifically and will abuse him because of what he now has announced his lifestyle is. It will be the fans towards Sam, and it will be the media towards the teammates. Those are the only issues that I see in this whole issue at all. Getting back to we were meant to get to that towards the end of the show, but I want to get back to the Arizona Cardinals and end the offseason. We talked about the free agency, but let's go talk about the salary cap. So far, we haven't seen any cuts. We haven't seen any cuts because of the salary cap, and we will see more of those right at the beginning of the league year when they're trying to make moves. Usually, salary cap moves happen in conjunction or that will precede signings. Just simply because even though there's a higher cap hit, sometimes those are guys you're going to want to keep as long as you can, just in case nothing else comes around. Salary cap casualties. Who do you think they will be? I'm going to take number one. I think pretty much the writing is on the wall at this point. It, regardless of whether his play deserves it, Darren College, I think, is kind of the consensus guy. Like Adam Snyder a year ago, Darren College has seen his last snap with the Arizona Cardinals, if not for his display, but rather his salary and the fact that they've got that they are planning on having Earl Watford battle Paul Fonseca for that starting spot on the right side. And hopefully one of those two guys, well, if Fonseca is better than he was last year, that's a plus because Fonseca wasn't particularly great. And if Watford can beat out Fonseca, well, then that still represents an upgrade at a much, much lower salary. Guys like Jerrod Powers among readers and fans I know have come up. Guys like Darnell Dockett has come up. Ryan Williams, Jasper Brinkley. I think the easiest two, if I'm pointing to two that I think are almost certain things, then it'll depend on what happened with Carlos Dansby. During college, I think you're going to see him cut, and I think his salary cap hit might be designated a post June 1st one, so they can spread that $4 million dead over a couple of years. And then I think Jasper Brinkley, assuming Carlos Dansby resigns, is the other no brainer because they're his savings come with very little dead money. Is there, and for my money, I don't think that Gerard Powers is going anywhere just because of the situation. I wrote a post about it a couple days ago. Seth, who are your, if you had to pick, who do you think those salary cap casualties are going to be?
I think, like you said, Brinkley kind of weighs on what happens with Washington. If Washington goes to jail, basically, Brinkley will be on the team next year. So that's a fairly easy one. Another interesting one's Ryan Williams. They save about $1 million. You know, you might say, oh, it's only $1 million. Well, that's more money than they have already. So
it's $1 million.
Yeah. You know, looking at it, really, after that, it's interesting in the sense of you can bring up a couple guys. Rob Housler, what is there? You know, he's cheap at $1.5 million, but you're only going to take, you know, you're only going to take a little over $100,000 on dead money if you cut him. So, you know, if you can use that $1.4 million elsewhere to more impactful players, the guys that aren't dropping touchdowns, that block better type things, then maybe. The other interesting one, and, you know, you kind of hit on it earlier, is Darnell Dockett. And I think Dockett comes down to what they do in the draft. You know, we'll talk about this as we get closer, but if they're sitting at 20 and a guy like Coney Ealy, maybe Lewis Nix from Notre Dame, different type of defensive linemen are available, and they're the highest rated guys on the Cardinals board, all of a sudden that becomes an interesting pick because, okay, now we can free up another, you know, nearly $3 million in cap space and kind of go forward with what they did last year. Okay, now, you know, maybe a guy, you know, is on the market late, just use Eric Winston again, say, oh, Eric Winston, you're available, it's June, we have $3 million from Darnell Dockett, let's, you know, pick you up. You know, you combine College and Dockett, and all of a sudden you have $6 million, and maybe you can get a guy like a Brandon Albert. Maybe he's outpriced himself for a multi-year deal, and you can get him on a one-year deal for, you know, $7 million that you just freed up from Darnell and Darren College. That's where that'll be. But like I said, I think it's Brinkley. You know, you kind of hit it on the head with College. He's most likely going to be gone. If you know, D. Wash stays out of jail, I think Brinkley's cut. And then come draft day, I think if the Cardinals get a chance to pick up a defensive end that they like in round one or two, then I think we can see the end of the Darnell Dockett era in Arizona. Because that $9 million is kind of ridiculous for what his play has been recently. And I know he's paid for what he did before, but that's just, you know, that's kind of the way the NFL works, so it's unfortunate, but I think you could see him be the other name.
Yeah, the only thing, and I kind of share the same opinion as we've seen some of the other mainstream media here locally, is when it comes to Darnell Dockett, you have to think about the replacement. One, production-wise, you can probably find a guy who can be as impactful on the field. However, the one thing that we're missing, and now we did see this in Adrian Wilson. Adrian Wilson was a definitive leader in the locker room on that defense. Now, granted, in part, the defense, I mean, they had the staff turnover, and so they did make that cut. But he had already made a significant pay cut before that. Darnell Dockett is the leader of that defense. And when Bruce Arians came over, he reached out to him, and Darnell Dockett became a key leader. Not just a vocal leader, but in everything. He leads the defensive huddles. He leads the huddles in the locker room. And while I would say before they see him as a salary cap casualty, I would expect first that he is approached for restructure. The question is, I got the question on Twitter, if he's ever restructured. I do not think that has ever been the case. I think perhaps he might be one of those guys that does a restructure. Adrian Wilson style, perhaps. I just don't see. I think they, even if they get a maybe if a tie up at number 20, because they like to play those guys right away in the first round to pick up a defense, and perhaps then you'd see say bye to Dockett. But other than that, I really think it's doubtful that Dockett will be anywhere but Arizona in 2014.
Well, the crazy thing to think about, and this is something that I've, you know, as I'm doing draft stuff, and you take into account what guys are being paid in that sense, and it's crazy to think that the Cardinals actually, their starting defensive ends get paid more than any defensive end combination in the NFL. Calais Campbell and Darnell Dockett make $20 million combined. And I think the only other one that's close is with the Buffalo Bills and with Chicago Bears, because they're paying those asinine contracts to Mario Williams and Julius Peppers. But, yeah, the Cardinals are the only team that have, you know, that kind of the next closest is actually the Seahawks, who have, you know, $19 million wrapped up in their defensive ends, and they're getting ready to allegedly cut Chris Clemens. So, you know, it is something that happens, and that's something you have to look at is, okay, how much equity can you have in a singular position? I know what you're saying about Dockett in terms of his impact from the leadership and the vocal standpoint, but that's a lot of equity to have in one position, especially in a 3-4 defense. And I know the way Bowles uses his defensive ends is different, but that's just, like I said, that's a lot of real estate tied up in two players. You know, so that's just where I think it could happen. But again, it would have to be an early draft pick that takes a spot. It's not going to be a street free agent or anything crazy like that. It would have to be a calculated move that Keim makes based on, you know, either a conversation with Darnell and he doesn't think, like you said, a pay cut is going to happen, or, you know, he just is so infatuated with player X at 20 that he's willing to move on from Darnell.
And let's talk one last thing. We kind of talked about the Michael Sam thing. This is more recent. The whole Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin report came out. Now, Seth, you played football, correct, when you were in high school? That's the difference between me and you, and definitely in this. I've never played football, and so I've never been, aside from with my friends, so I've never had the locker room experience myself. My experience in the locker room has been as a media member only, and your locker room experience is a little bit filtered in the fact that there's limited media, so the entire team knows when the media is going to be there, so you don't see it all. You see a little bit of the interaction, how fun it is, and the camaraderie, but you don't see it all, because they know when the media is going to be there, and so some guys know when to not be around, period. At what point, Seth, having had the locker room experience, how much beyond what is normal did you see, based on what you see in the report, how much further beyond what is acceptable did this go for Incognito and his band of merry men on the offensive line with Pouncey and Jerry?
You know, it was just odd because it was almost to the point of being uncomfortable and, like, socially, you don't want to say socially unacceptable because, like, the things they were talking about are reprehensible, but it was just, like, almost, I hate to say this, but, like, sociopaths talking. That's what it seemed like to me. It's, like, two guys more, like, in prison than in a locker room. The worst locker room I've ever been in is a baseball locker room, and, you know, I've got stories from buddies that played in minor leagues and had, you know, cups of coffees in the majors and things of that nature. And so when this came out and all of this, I know a lot of language, you know, words that you wouldn't say to anybody else in a workplace, and things you say to anybody else in a workplace would get thrown around in there because, you know, it is a locker room. That's why they say locker room talk. But it was just to a point where it reached a level of uncomfortableness that even somebody that grew up in that, you know, that arena wouldn't be comfortable with, because it was things that you typically as individuals, you don't go to that dark of a place, and that's what it kind of got to for me, especially with the things about, you know, shooting coaches, shooting, you know, players, things of that nature were interesting. You know, the sexual stuff about Martin's sister, you hear a lot of that stuff in locker rooms. You know, people don't want to admit that it's said in locker rooms, but I don't know about the vividness of what he said to him. You know, I can't comment on that, but you'll hear stuff about, oh yeah, I took your sister out last night, you know, things of that nature. You'll hear people talking about their mother, their sister, you know, all
yes,
of that
they,
stuff.
I mean, but, you hear that from high school. You hear that in a regular high school, teenagers, not in a locker room type of setting. You'll hear some of that.
And so, but yeah, like I said, for me, the most uncomfortable part was definitely about the, you know, kind of wanting, I don't know, to kill people and shooting people and doing things of that nature. That's what was, you know, almost on the psychotic side for me.
Well, what was interesting is even, I mean, you could see public opinion sway. At the very beginning was, oh, Incognito's this absolute jerk. Then when the text messages released, it kind of swung towards, wow, Jonathan, what was this that he was? Maybe they didn't read all of them. When I read through those texts, even though I could tell, for one, you could see a guy like Martin who's raised a little bit differently. He's not like your typical. I mean, a lot of people, old school football players, they learned in that situation what you do is you. If they start talking about, you just beat the crap out of them or fight them until, even if they beat the crap out of you, and that takes care of it. And that probably is what, to deal with Incognito, that probably would have been what would have shut him up. He as that type of person would have had more respect for Martin in that sense. However, I did not see, oh, these were really two buddies that were, I saw that were okay and just joking around. I still read in those text messages something very uncomfortable of a guy that Incognito thought it was okay, or maybe at some was trying to be better than Martin, because Martin didn't respond to a lot of the. There were lots of times when it got to the name calling and the abusive language of that sort, so he didn't respond. And the findings of the NFL are very clear. I don't think Richie Incognito is going to find another job in the league, and I think he will probably be suspended even if a team signed him, to at least for this coming season, maybe half the season. Jonathan Martin, on the other hand, I don't know. With either of those guys, would you like to see on if you were a fan of any team, would you be okay with either of them being on a team, the viewers, anywhere?
The thing with Martin and Incognito, he needs to just be done in the NFL because he needs like, counseling or some type of, you know, where he can share his emotions in a safe place that doesn't involve other people hearing them. But as far as Martin goes, he was a guy that I liked coming out of Stanford, and then he just never grew from you know, year one, or you know, his college tape to the NFL, and he almost stagnated and regressed. And that's because you can tell he's just not a very physical guy. He doesn't play with the necessary physicality of what it takes to be successful in the NFL, and I think that's where the problem's going to come in, is that he's just not an NFL offensive lineman. Maybe that had a lot to do with what was going on inside the locker room, and so, you know, it's once that all gets ironed out, he can go back to focusing more on football and yada, yada, yada. But I think just from the tape, in essence, if I'm the Cardinals, I, you know, don't even look at him, because you kind of have something similar in Bradley Saul. And so
without the issues.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't necessarily want to give up, you know, draft stock in order to get more of that. So that's just my take, and that's just based on the tape. The off-the-field stuff, Martin seems like a smart guy. He seems like a guy that keeps his head on fairly straight. So I'm not, you know, I don't really see any issues there. But everything else is, his actual game is what troubles me more than anything else.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Seth, tonight as we wrap up Revenge of the Birds Radio, our latest episode. We've talked about the how the off season as we get ready for free agency. We will. I'm not sure when we're going to have our next show. The next one we will do will probably come up nearer close to actual free agency. We could start talking about actual free agent targets from around the league as opposed to just the teams. Now, if we get some other big news, maybe we'll have something come up, have a short show, and then. But we'll definitely get into some big draft talk in the weeks to come, in the months to come. And as always, listeners, Seth, what is your draft podcast? What's the draft, your draft podcast? Because I know you guys, you posted the site. When do you guys do your show?
We'll be going on Tuesday nights. We just kind of, we play it by ear with who we're having on that week. So this week we're starting our positional look. So we'll start with the quarterbacks. So all the Carson Palmer haters can come and listen to that and see who's going to be available for the Cardinals to replace Palmer with. And then all the people that think that there's diamonds in the roughs, you guys can listen to that as well, because we'll be going pretty deep into that. Right now it looks like Sigmund Bloom from footballguys.com will be joining Justice and I, and we'll start there. And then we're also going to start our team previews this week. So we'll have a Texans fan on and a Washington Redskins fan. I know they don't actually have the second pick in the draft, but we're going to go in what should be the draft order. So we'll start there this week, and we're going to be going by position and kind of by team over the next some odd weeks until we get to draft week. So Cardinals fans, listen up, because like I said, we start with quarterbacks and then we go to tight ends and wide receivers, and we know Bruce Arians likes wide receivers, so we'll be talking about them too for you guys.
All right, well, thanks for coming on, Seth. We always appreciate talking with me, because it makes it more interesting than listening to just me. So appreciate you being on. Listeners, thanks for being on here. If you are on live, I appreciate the calls and I appreciate the listen. If you're listening to this as an archive download, well, you know where to find us. Keep on listening. Visit RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Keep the conversation going there, and have a good night, and we will be back on another night, and I just don't know when. So have a good night, Cardinals fans.
Good night, everyone.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at Facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.